Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody. With our star comedian, Fred Allen. Kenny Baker and Portland Hoffa. Our guest, Dr. Elias Bodenweiser, famous horse dentist. Wynn Murray and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time. Ladies and gentlemen, if there is a joke told on this program, you know who tells it. This program, if it is a program, is a one-man show, if it is a show. And here is the one man, if he is a man. No. Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Say, Jimmy, did I detect a note of bitterness in your introduction?
Yes,
was that remark about my telling all of the jokes tinctured, let us say, a mite with the essence of salt?
Yes.
Jimmy Wallington. Sulking. Are you putting on a pout?
Yes, I...
Well, what's wrong?
What's wrong? The same routine every week, fed up.
What?
The diet. What do I ever get to...
Yes.
I never get a joke to tell. You know, I can get laughs, too.
Well, all right, Jimmy. I didn't know you felt that way about it. You think you can get a laugh? Now, there's a joke here coming up here, the next two lines. It's my joke, but you can go right ahead. You.
Oh, gee, thanks.
Oh, that's all right, Jimmy. Now, read this joke. It's on.
Okay, here it goes. Why have all the women out in hot stocking slacks? She, 20 women out here were drafted by mistake.
Well, all right. Now, you've told your joke. Now, nothing happened, huh? Now, you satisfied?
Well, listen, can I give me a down? You tell a gag like that. Well, it's juicy dialogue for yourself.
All right, you old fudge. It's a juicy dialogue. I'll give you my personal dialogue. Now, these next lines right here were written especially for me by a man who lives under glass most of the time. Just comes out once a week and writes these two lines for me. Now, you go ahead. You can read them, James.
Okay, Fred. Here comes.
Go right ahead.
Wait. Papa comes down. That's it, son. Comes the late week.
Well, there you are, Jimmy.
Now, wait just a minute. That was no joke. That was a fan do. I get a...
Oh, now, don't blame the lines. It was your delivery. You can't read them. You don't know how. Well, you're just not a comedian.
I suppose you can get a laugh with those same lines.
Yes, I think I can. Now, listen. I'll read the very same lines. And here it is, the latest news of the week.
Well, I'll be...
You certainly will. And when you convince yourself, it'll be unanimous. And now that you... And now the Texaco... The Texaco... Now, don't laugh. Your mustache hangs down and it looks awful when you laugh. Keep your lip up, if you will. The Texaco News presents a highlight from the world of news. Washington, D.C., Associated Press Index of Industrial Activity shows sharp rise in nation's business gains for fifth consecutive week. Since index only shows increase in big business, Texaco News interviews the little businessman to check on increases, if any, in the retail trade. Now, first, we turn to agriculture and question a man about farm, Fergus Till. How is your farming outlook, Fergus?
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
How do you mean?
Well, up to 2 years ago, my business was hunky-dory. I was going great guns.
I see.
Then he started changing his mind, and I was sunk.
Well, but how...
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
If who would make up whose mind?
I'll explain.
Well, I wish you would.
I will.
Fine.
Quit butting in.
Whoa, excuse
me. Quiet, please.
Well, all right, I'm shut.
It's about time. Now, where was I?
Well, you were talking about your business.
Oh, yes. I grow cranberries.
You grow cranberries?
Got the biggest bog in Jersey.
The biggest bog, huh?
I can grow and pick 2,000 bushels.
Well, good for you.
For 20 years, I had my cranberry crop timed to the day.
Well, how do you mean, time?
Well, my crop ripened the last week in November, just in time for Thanksgiving Day. My cranberries was fresh from the bog.
Oh, I see.
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
His mind about what?
Thanksgiving!
Oh, you mean...
Yes, 2 years ago, he moved Thanksgiving up a week.
Yes?
My cranberries was timed.
They ripened a week late?
2,000 bushels. I'm left holding the bog.
What about this year?
Well, this year I timed my cranberries so they'd ripen a week sooner. So what does he do?
What?
Last week he moves Thanksgiving back again.
Yes?
This year I'm going to have 2,000 bushels of cranberries ripe a week too soon.
Your business is all mixed up.
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
Well, tell me, Fergus, when you're stuck with 2,000 bushels of cranberries on Thanksgiving like that, now, what do you do?
Wait till Christmas.
Yeah?
Shrink the cranberries?
Uh-huh.
Sell them for Holly.
It's still the berries, and thank you, Fergus Till. Now, a man with plenty of troubles, Mr. Sigmund Toffee. What business are you in, Sigmund?
I run a pet shop.
A pet shop. And how do you find the pettery business?
Oh, it's brutal, brother.
But conditions are improving. Why should you have a slump?
Well, I'll tell you. I got two big bloodhounds in this shop. They got appetites like horses. When I was doing good, they ate up all the profits.
They ate the profits, really?
Yeah, sometimes I'd have a big week. Maybe I'd sell a snake or a honey bear.
Yeah?
Out the money would go for dog meat.
And now?
Business is tough. I got to cut down on the bloodhounds.
What do you feed them now?
Well, during the day, I don't feed them nothing.
Oh, you wait until night?
Yeah, when it gets dark, I take the two bloodhounds up to the zoo.
And?
I throw them over the fence. Then I wait till they're finished eating.
Oh. On the city, huh? But how does this affect your business?
Well, all week long, I keep the bloodhounds going at the zoo.
Yeah?
Saturday night, I lock up the pet shop.
Uh-huh.
During Sunday, the bloodhounds get hungry.
And?
I open up Monday morning.
Uh-huh.
No matter how many animals I left in the shop Saturday night, Monday morning, I got two bloodhounds.
You mean they keep eating your stock?
Every week I'm getting mice, rabbits, canaries, and mongooses on credit.
I see.
All week long I don't sell nothing. Saturday night I lock up my mongooses, canaries, and rabbits.
And?
Monday morning I got two bloodhounds.
Well, how long has this been going on?
6 months.
And despite the fact that business is booming all over...
With me, everything's gone to the dogs.
The bloodhounds. It shouldn't happen to a man, and thank you, thank you, Sigmund Toffee. A businesswoman from downtown is Mrs. Dolores Buxbaum. Now, what business are you in, Mrs. Buxbaum?
Formerly, I'm running a delicatessen. The Salami Saloon.
You mean Salami Salon, don't you?
Salon Saloon. I'm closing it down.
Well, why?
The delicatessen is old-timey. Corny could be the word for it.
The delicatessen is through.
Positively. The old dirty liverwurst hanging on the door. The pickle barrel with flies making convoys for the pickles. All of this is passé, taboo. Also, it is unsanitary.
Oh, I see.
Today's diners is wanting southern cuisine. This, Dolores Buxbaum is serving.
So instead of the Salami Salon, today your restaurant is called...
Mammy Buxbaum's You All Southern Chicken Fry, You All.
And what food do you serve?
Southern dishes only. Corn prone.
Corn prone.
Candied yammers.
Candied yammers.
Chicken barbecue.
Chicken barbecue. Delicious. And how is business?
Always by Mammy Bunk's Barmouth's pet.
Well, would you say the general conditions have improved your business?
This together with advertising.
Ah, advertising. What sort?
Well, leaving the subway at Canal Street, a sign is reading...
What?
You are liking Southern cooking. Go straight ahead and keep on looking.
Then you have another sign straight ahead.
This is saying, for home-cooked food with nothing fancy, turn right here, go up Delancey.
And your next sign reads...
It's coming closer to Good Corn Pone. Across the street, it's next to Cone.
And the next sign?
You are there.
And how does your last sign read?
This is it. We wouldn't lie. Mammy Bucks Bounds Chicken Fry, you all.
Well, thank you very much, Mammy Bucks Bounds. You all. Thank you. And from these little businessmen, we turn to a young man whose business is vending vocal wares, Kenny Baker. Kenny's first sample tonight is Walking by the River.
I'm meeting someone there tonight.
And now a word from Larry Elliott. Proceed, DeLorean.
Go easy on that Lauren stuff, Fred, or I'll haul off and call you John F. Sullivan.
John F. Sullivan?
I was talking to H. Allen Smith, the author of Low Man on a Totem Pole.
Yeah.
And he told me that...
Hell, Harry, people never invited me out. They were afraid I'd start a fight all the time.
Well, it just goes to show how much there is in a name, Fred. Sullivan's a fighting name.
Yeah.
It makes you think of boxing. And in the same way, Texaco Sky Chief is a flying name. It makes you think of soaring power, of smooth, almost effortless motion.
Yes, I guess it does.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, with this pleasant idea of Sky Chief in mind, try a tank full and enjoy the on travel. With this different premium gasoline, you'll sense in your car a new eagerness to take off, a soaring ease on the level road. You'll feel its quick upsurge to the challenge of a hill, its flexibility when you throttle down to a slow glide in traffic. Let the name Sky Chief tell you, you'll enjoy more than just driving. You'll fly the highway with this Texaco pre for those who want the best.
Goodman and his rumba rabble have just played Adios. And now, ladies and gentlemen, oh, the door, it's always something. Come in.
What time is it? What time is it?
It's 9:20.
Thank you.
Just a minute. Who are you?
I'm Bulliver.
Bulliver, yeah. Anything to give me a headache. Oh, come in.
You have a headache?
Yes.
Here's a seltzer. Oh, shucks, I thought I had a seltzer, but I haven't.
But just a second. Who are you?
I'm Alka.
Well, that's radio. Bulliver doesn't know what time it is, and Alka hasn't got a seltzer. Oh, hello, Portland.
Hello.
Welcome. Don't, I wish you wouldn't bother me now. I've got other worries.
Oh, all right. I'll go over in the corner and do my knitting.
Oh, you're knitting? What are you knitting?
Well, I don't know yet.
You don't? Well, if you're knitting, you certainly ought to know what you're making.
Well, I started to knit a sock. I did it.
Oh, but did it happen?
It kept slipping.
It came out. Well, what do you?
I kept knitting, and it's like a leg.
After the sleeve came out. Well, how long have you been working on this masterpiece?
I've been knitting 4 months.
4 straight months, huh? And what does it look like now?
Do you think Don Wilson could use a sleeping bag?
Yes, sir. You figured that out good, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
We could have put a commercial in between those two words there. A sleeper. Yes, sir. If you ever fall on the point of one of those dull jokes of yours, what was the idea? What was the short pause for station identification? You want to read it over again and try it over, because then you'll have it right for midnight, you know. What does it look like now?
Do you think Don Wilson could use a sleeping bag?
No, I think he took the first one you offered him. Well, it's a fine thing. There's one thing about nobody will know who's the straight man tonight, anyway. But you'd better quit knitting, Portland. You'll end up like the cross-eyed woman who knitted a sweater for her husband, and he had to have his arms broken before he could put it on. Very painful. The waist was a sweater, and the arms were two casts. He looked very well in it. Now, what about... but enough hilarity. Now, what about our guest?
America's foremost horse dentist. Mr. Allen, meet Dr. Elias Bodenweiser.
Well, good evening, Dr. Bodenweiser. Portland tells me Dr. Bodenweiser was off in the yonder there in the stable. Well, Portland tells me, Dr. Bodenweiser, that you are, by profession, a practicing horse dentist.
That's correct.
And how long have you been engaged in this unique calling?
Practically all of my life.
And approximately, how long has that been, Doctor?
Well, I'm 75 years old.
You are 75 years old? You certainly don't look it. Why, Doctor, you look 10 years younger than Jack Benny right here and now. Why, you've got more hair and one eyebrow than Benny has on that whole honeydew head of his. But tell me, Dr. Bodenweiser, how does one go about becoming a stallion bicuspid authority?
I started out as a veterinary and finally decided to specialize in dentistry.
Well, did they have veterinary schools way back when you launched your career?
Oh, yes. I graduated from the Dr. Leotard Veterinary School.
It was sort of a horse Harvard, hey? Well, did they have degrees at that school, you know, B.S., Bachelor of Spavin? Or did they have fraternities like Phi Beta Coulter?
No, we all got diplomas the same as any other couple.
I see. And now that you are saving the great American steed from pink toothbrush and receding gums, where do you practice?
Mostly at racetracks and in larger private stables.
Well, it must be rather difficult practicing horse dentistry.
How do you mean, Fred?
Well, when a horse has a toothache, he can't put his hoof in his mouth and show you which tooth hurts, can he?
It's easy, Fred. I can generally look in the horse's mouth and tell what the trouble is right away.
Well, tell me, does the mouth-happy horse go to see his dentist twice a year?
No, in my profession, it's the dentist goes to see the horse, the patient.
But it must be... You have a choice there with the dollar dent. Say, it must be a gala day in the stables, Doctor, when you come charging in, your forceps akimbo, your dental floss streaming in the breeze, your drill stripped for action.
I don't use a drill, Fred. Horses don't have cavities.
Why, with all that sugar they eat and not massaging their gums, why, I should think a horse's mouth would be a tusk shambles.
No, the average horse has a healthy mouth.
What dental attention does a horse require, Doctor?
Once a year, the teeth need filing.
Why?
The enamel grows into sharp points, And if not filed down, the cut the points, cut the cheek and the tongue.
Well, what about extractions? Now, do horses ever lose a fang?
Yes, I'm pulling them all the time.
You're pulling teeth all the time, really? Well, what do you do with your old horse teeth, Doctor?
I just throw them away.
You just throw them away, huh? Why, you ought to keep them. You can sell horse teeth to nearsighted elks for their vet.
I never thought of that, Fred.
Oh, yes, a lot of nearsighted elks go all through life always brushing off their vests. They keep mistaking those little elk's teeth for tapioca. They're always brushing. But tell me, Doctor, isn't it rather risky making an extraction?
Not at all.
Have you ever started to extract a horse's tooth and have the horse then start to extract one of your fingers?
No, I'm very careful, and my forceps are 22 inches long.
Forceps are 22 inches long. Well, do you use the old dentist bromides when you're extracting, you know, like the dentist says, open a little wider, please. This isn't going to hurt a bit.
No, I just keep the horse's mouth open and my mouth shut.
That's a wise procedure, Doctor. I wish I had a horse so I could practice it. But tell me, Dr. Bodenweiser, what other dental work do you do besides filing and extraction?
I treat abscesses, broken jaw bones, and sometimes put caps on broken teeth.
I guess you must feel pretty good down at the track when one of your patients runs by in a race, sees you, and flashes his new inlay or bridge at you.
Horses don't get inlays and bridge work.
Well, right? I wouldn't know, Doctor. I've never even looked a gift horse in the mouth. But working around at the tracks, I imagine you've attended some of the famous racehorses.
Yes, I've worked on War Admiral, Man of War, and many others. But have half the time, I don't know what horse I'm working on.
Why is that?
When I'm working over a stable of horses, they all look alike to me.
Well, naturally, you've got your head down in their mouths all the time. Now, you ought to take your head out and look around once in a while. There is a great difference between some horses, Doctor.
What's the difference, Fred?
That's what I say, Doctor. What's the difference? Why bother with it? Well, now, do you ever find it necessary to give your patients Novocaine?
Not in dentistry, Fred.
Well, some people must give their horses anesthetics. If those... the doctor told me to give up tea, and I'm leaving it out of all the words. All he lets me have is a little bag for the knees of my pants, and outside of that... Well, what's the difference? Do you ever find it necessary? Anesthetics. I'll find the place. I'm coming. Track is muddy here. I'm coming through along slowly. If those plugs of Crosby's aren't Novocaine from the hips down, Doctor, I'm crazy. Well, it's certainly been nice of you to stop by and horse around tonight, Doctor.
It's been a pleasure, Fred.
Say confidentially, Doctor, what looks good in the third at Belmont tomorrow?
I wouldn't know, Fred.
What? Why, you, a horse dentist, should certainly be able to give me a winner.
Why?
You're the one man at the track who can get his information straight from the horse's mouth. I thought
That's
you...
That's very good.
I thought you'd enjoy it. Thank you and good night, Doctor.
Good night.
Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Wynn Murray. Wynn is starting her second week at the Radio City Music Hall tomorrow. Loyally, she fits us into her big scheme of things. Here to sing Play, Play, Tina.
Love was oh so strong. the family, or wood for you and me, instead of they. Oh, play, Tina, play, Tina, play. A family, oh, wood for you and me, instead of they. Oh, play, Tina, play, Tina, play. Play it sweet, play it low. Play, Tina, play, Tina, play.
Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, with your kind permission, I would like to read a message directed to our more than 45,000 Texaco dealers. Quote, the Texas Company has just donated this hour of radio time from July 1st to October 1st to the government. It is to be used by the United States Treasury Department to promote the sale of defense savings bonds and stamps. You Texaco dealers can further add to this investment in America. You are in business in cities, towns, and hamlets in every section of our country. You come in contact with millions of fellow Americans, those who travel along your way, and those who live in your communities. You, the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers, and those employed in turn by you, comprise a great civilian defense army on every highway and byway. So let this hour of your network time, donated to the government, be a symbol of the individual time and personal investment you will each put behind America's defense program. As a great group in constant touch with the public, Texaco dealers can do much to further the sale of defense bonds and stamps. So, Texaco dealers, let's go to work for Uncle Sam.
Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WABC, New York, 880 on your dial.
That was just a little bit south of North Carolina, played by more musicians than Maestro Goodman can shake a stick at. Maestro, you ought to get a bigger stick or a smaller band. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, Mr. Allen.
Oh, yes, Kenny. Say, what is the matter with you? Where did you get that suit?
It's pretty sloppy, huh?
Sloppy? Why, Kenny, you are a herringbone nightmare.
It's my father's suit.
Well, are you sure he isn't still in it? I just saw something moving around in the back there. That suit looks like a shroud with sleeves.
I'm a mess, ain't I?
Yeah. You are a super mess, I must say.
Nice, thanks. Now look at my face. You notice anything peculiar?
Why, it's all blotchy.
Hideous, huh?
Ghastly, Kenny. How did you ever get the front of your face that red? Have you been smelling an electric fan?
No, I've been using sandpaper for Kleenex.
Well, it's no skin off my nose, as the man said.
You know what I wish, F.A.?
What?
I wish I was as repulsive as you are.
Oh, well, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know, Kenny. It's taken me a good many years to get to look like this.
gosh, if I could only get the skin under my eyes to hang down like yours.
Yes? Yes, I have the only eyes in radio with knapsacks.
Oh, Penny!
Yes, Bertie?
The man is here with the dandruff. It's Collect.
Oh, thanks, Bertie. I'll be right back, F.A.
Well, who is this man with the Collect dandruff?
Kenny ordered some dandruff for his coat collar.
What's going on here? First, a baggy suit he has on, his face is all blotchy, and now dandruff?
Oh, Kenny's also trying to get dishpan hands and haystack hair.
Dishpan hands? You mean he's deliberately attempting to render himself revolting?
Yes. He's trying to make a bad impression on Myrna Hornbustle.
Who is Myrna Hornbustle?
She wants to marry Kenny.
What?
It's Mr. Annalick's idea.
Annalick? So Annalick, the confidence man in whom nobody has any confidence, has got his talons in Kenny again, huh?
They started another business together.
Oh, not again.
Yes, they're running a matrimonial agency for June Bride.
But where does Myrna Hornbustle come in?
She's their first customer, and Mr. Annalick guaranteed to get her a husband.
Oh, I get it now. She is probably buzzard bait. Annalick can't find her a husband, so he is trying to make Kenny take the rap.
That's why Kenny is messing himself up.
Well, darn that Annalick leading Kenny astray, making a racket out of marriage.
Marriage. Goodman is laughing, but not loud.
You know something about marriage, Maestro?
In my own house, I, Goodman, am wearing the pants.
Well, good for you.
I could go wherever I please if only...
If only what?
If only Mrs. Goodman, while I'm wearing the pants, would give me back the suspenders.
You're lucky she doesn't give you a belt, Maestro. Now, go away. Go away.
Say, F.A.
What is it, Kenny?
How do I look with this dandruff on?
You look terrible. Kenny, stop this sartorial hugger-mugger. Just because you want to fend off this Myrna Hornbustle.
But I'm in a spot, F.A.
Well, can't you get somebody else interested in Miss Hornbustle, Kenny?
I'm trying, Porty. I'm mailing out her pictures to bachelors.
Her pictures? What do the pictures look like?
I've got one right here. See? Oh. This is Myrna Hornbustle.
Gosh, she's beautiful.
Oh, wait a minute, Kenny. This here is a picture of Hedy Lamarr.
Put a beard on Hedy Lamarr and you got Myrna Hornbustle.
Miss Hornbustle has a beard?
Van Dyke.
A Van Dyke?
A duplex Van Dyke. It has 2 points.
But a bride with a beard, you'll never get a husband for her.
Why don't you send out a picture of Miss Hornbustle in a pretty dress, Kenny?
You can't see her dress, Porty. It's a pretty long beard.
Why don't you call in the Schick Injector Razor Company?
I sent the Schick Company Myrna's picture, and they wrote back, try the International Harvester Company.
Well, if they give up, you certainly ought to.
Oh, I've got to keep trying, F.A. I'm not trapped yet.
What are you going to do, Penny?
I've got to find somebody else to propose to Miss Hornbustle. There must be somebody.
Well, don't look at me. I've got enough troubles without ogling a bearded lady.
Then... Can I use the microphone for a minute, F.A.?
For what?
Well, Mr. Annalick wrote a commercial for Miss Hornbustle.
Well, if it's your only hope, go ahead, Kenny. Read your commercial.
Okay. Men, if you want to get married this June, don't shop around. Meet Miss Myrna Hornbustle. Myrna comes complete with hope chest, wedding ring, 4 pounds of rice...
And duplex Van Dyke.
Your druggist knows Myrna Hornbustle as Myrn, spelled M-Y-R-N. Remember, men, Myrna Hornbustle contains sulfur. She'll make the perfect match.
I have heard some insane things on the radio, but you and Annalick have sounded a new psychopathic low.
Gosh, maybe that's a client already. Hello? Oh, hello, Mr. Annalick. Myrna wants her deposit back? Well, I just broadcast it. Tell her she'll start getting a fan proposal tomorrow. Oh, she wants a proposal tonight. Okay.
What's wrong, Kenny?
Somebody's got to take Myrna out tonight and propose.
Looks as though you're hooked, Kenny.
Well, isn't anybody going to help me? How about you, Mr. Goodman? Will you take Miss Hornbustle out for me?
First, you will have to introduce Miss Hornbottle to Mrs. Goodman.
And then?
And then...
Wait a minute. It's not that good. We both have to read it. I mean... one of us can handle it, I'm afraid. And then after Miss Hornbustle has been introduced to Mrs. Goodman, and then?
And then, like little Caporus in the fourth race at Belmont yesterday...
Yes?
Miss Hornbustle is getting scratched.
Maestro, you are the only man I know who speaks a perfect broken English.
Gee, if that's Miss Hornbustle, Kenny, I'll talk to her woman to woman.
If I was one of the Smith brothers, I could talk to her beard to beard.
Oh, hello, Mr. Anlick. I... What? Miss Hornbustle's uncle died? She's inherited $3 million?
$3 million?
Oh, well, look, I think I can take Miss Hornbustle out tonight.
Kenny?
Just a minute. Yes, Mr. Goodman?
It is just coming to me. Mrs. Goodman is broad-minded. I could take the Slearnik Hornbustle out tonight.
Oh, no, it's all right, Mr. Goodman.
I insist.
Oh, no, Mr. Goodman.
Yes,
no,
Kenny.
Now, wait a minute, boys. Don't argue, fellas. I've just been thinking I can take Miss Hornbustle off both your hands. I will take her out tonight.
I'll tell you what. We'll all take her out.
Good.
Hello, Mr. Anlick. Tell Miss Hornbustle... What?
What's wrong, Kenny?
Mr. Anlick says Miss Hornbustle isn't Miss Hornbustle anymore.
Well, who is she?
She's Mrs. Anlick.
I should have known. Sing, Kenny. Very nice, Kenny. You know, Jimmy, I've been thinking over what Dr. Bodenweiser, the horse dentist, told us a little while ago. You know, I think the doctor's got something there. Did you hear what he said about horse sense?
Oh, yes.
Now, there's one advantage the lowly horse has over the automobile, Jimmy. A car will never have horse sense. A car can't rise up on its hind wheels and neigh when a bridge is washed out in the dark at night. A car can't warn you when there's trouble ahead.
Oh, you're wrong, Fred.
Yeah?
An automobile does have a way of warning you when trouble lies ahead. A way of making it known when excessive engine wear may have taken place. And that warning is smoke. Smoke pouring from the exhaust pipe. Smoke may mean trouble that might call for a big engine overhaul job to fix. And remember, the danger of needless engine wear due to the sustained heat of longer and hotter trips from now on should be considered. So before your car becomes a smoker, see your Texaco dealer. He'll give your car a complete, safe lubrication with insulated Havoline. This Texaco premium oil is insulated to stand up under today's high engine temperatures that can break down ordinary oil and leave costly engine parts unprotected. Havoline is distilled, too, free from carbon-forming impurities that also hasten wear. So protect your engine now. Heed the smoke warning and change to insulated Havoline at your nearest Texaco dealer.
And now the Texaco Workshop Players. Tonight they present a Hollywood faux pas entitled The Great Studio Economy Wave, or Everyone Got a Salary Cut and the Boss Was the Knife of the Party. Music, maestro.
Hollywood, land of bedlam, bingo, and B-pictures. Hollywood, hive of fanfare and frustration. Of all the bewildered studios that dot this sun-kissed center, the most inefficient and broken-down outfit is Clambake Productions, Incorporated. Under the guidance of President F.A. Allen and 17 nephews, Clambake has hatched the most fragrant eggs in the history of the silver screen. Speaking of Clambake Productions, Jimmy Kidler, radio film critic, says...
Clambake Pictures is making a big mistake. Instead of releasing their pictures, they should release President Allen.
Katie LaFink, glamour girl on Clambake Lot, says...
I've been in so many turkeys, I'm beginning to look like a giblet. If my water wings didn't leak, I'd go back hostessing in swimming pools tomorrow.
Mr. Thurber Prawn, prominent banker who invested heavily in Clambake Productions, says...
It was a silly speculation, and I'm sorry. Still, I can safely say that
just
after all it is...
Just a minute, Mr. Prawn. What is that peculiar noise?
I say I invested my savings in Clambake Pictures, sir.
Yes?
Today, I'm whistling for my money.
You didn't quite make it at the end, but
yes,
thank
sir.
You, regardless. With disaster at his heels and creditors in a large bald spot in his hair, President F.A. Allen has resolved to economize to salvage his creaky organization. As we pick up President Allen, he is hurtling over the wolf outside his door and zooming into his office. Good morning, good morning, good morning, Miss Q.
Morning, F.A.
Yeah, things here at Clambake are tottering. The handwriting is on the wall.
Yeah? What does it say?
It says I've got to start a fresh economy wave.
You ain't cutting salaries again.
Everything that has been cut has got to be cut again. Take a memo.
Yes, sir.
As of now, no full-blooded Indians are to be hired for Western Pictures. We're cutting down to half-breeds. That's a 50% slash right there.
Yes, sir.
I'll take another memo.
Yes, sir.
Have all leading men turn in their old toupees at the front office. We can use those toupees to stuff office furniture.
Them pompadour toupees is going to be ticklish to sit on.
No levity, Miss Q.
Yes, sir.
We've got to cut down. From now on, I'm making nothing but sequel pictures. We can use the same costumes, same sets, and same publicity we used for you the first time.
Which pictures are you making?
Well, I'm doing a sequel to Adam Had Four Sons. It's called So Did Crosby.
Are you doing a sequel to Blood and Sand?
Blood and Sand, yes. I'm calling it Anemia and Gravel. The biggest Clambake production of all, however, will be my sequel to The Man Who Came to Dinner.
What are you going to call that?
He also stayed for supper.
I thought you was going to spend a fortune on that.
I intended to, but I brought that famous French chef on from New York. What's his name again?
Marcel of McGinnis's.
Oh, yes. Marcel of McGinnis's. I caught him working in the window there and signed him my last trip to New York. Buzz for Marcel.
Yes, sir.
Marcel is supposed to cook the food for the big banquet scene in the picture. He has got to cut down on that banquet.
This must be Marcel now.
Come in.
Bonjour, Hefe, bonjour. Vous êtes sending for Marcel of McGinnis?
Oui. I want to parler avec vous about le banquet scene in the cinema. He also stayed for supper.
Ah, oui. Marcel is preparing the meal terrifique.
That's why I sent for you, Marcel. We have got to cut down on the food.
But Marcel has the menu prepared. Crab leg canapé, soupe du jour, turkey stuffed with goose, goose stuffed with turkey, chicken stuffed with turkey and goose, if it will go in.
No. No, no, we have got to cut down, Marcel. Economize. We have got to make it cheaper.
But you are bringing Marcel of McGinnis to Hollywood to prepare the big banquet?
I know. But you will have to cook a smaller meal.
Mais, Marcel, the reputation.
Look, Marcel, make up a smaller menu. We'll shoot the food in a close-up. The meal will look bigger.
Bon, Marcel will prepare the bargain menu. I will start with consommé.
Consommé is fine. Get busy, Marcel, and show some enthusiasm.
Oui, enthusiasm. I am nuts about the good old consommé.
Good. Well, now we're getting someplace. Did you order those studio lunchroom cuts for the actors, Miss Q?
Yes, sir. We're photographing meat on bread.
Photographing the meat on through the bread and saving the meat, I see. Have there been any complaints?
Only Bolivar.
Bolivar? My star parrot?
Yeah, he's kicking about eating yellow buckshot for birdseed.
Dad, I've got to keep Bolivar happy. He's the only talking parrot in Hollywood. Bolivar's new picture, The Sea Hyena, will clean up. Come in.
Effie,
Napra, my ace director.
I'm through, Effie. This is the last straw.
Why aren't you directing The Sea Hyena, Napra?
Your star walked off the set.
Bolivar?
Yeah.
But why?
Well, you cut down on the parrot's food. He refuses to act.
Bolivar refuses?
He's gone on strike.
My economy drive is not going to be stopped by that poultry bottleneck. Where is Bolivar?
He's outside picketing your office.
He's picketing? One side, Napra. I'll open that door. Now, just a minute,
Bolivar.
Robert,
where's John L. Lewis?
Now, listen. Listen, Bolivar. Everybody in the studio here is taking a cut.
F.A. is right, Bolivar.
I'm a Polly, and you're a Crumb by golly.
Now, listen, Bolivar.
I don't have to take this. I got offers from Disney.
Why, you Technicolor buzzard. Now, here, stop honing your beak on my desk.
Okay, I'll use this chair. Sorry, sister, I gotta get glasses.
Now, this is mutiny, Bolivar. Bolivar, you get back to work.
I'll tell you, arbitrate, Alan.
All right, now what is it you want?
I want enough to eat.
All right.
I want my cage cleaned twice a day.
I'll get in there personally.
I want top billing in this picture.
It's yours, now go to work.
Okay, if I think of anything else, I'll be back.
Never mind that, get back out on the set.
Okay, here I go, starting back to work again, and here I go, acting like a jerk again.
And what a business. What a business, an executive capitulating to a parrot.
You're overdoing this economy, F.A.
Nonsense. I'll save money if I'll take that. Hello.
This is Salvin reporting from the cutting room, sir.
Yes, Salvin.
We're just cutting the road to Flatbush.
Ah, yes. The road to Flatbush. I eliminated negative expense. This picture was photographed on old celluloid collar.
That's why I'm calling.
How did the celluloid collar scenes work out?
Okay, but the word arrow keeps flashing across the screen.
Arrow?
Yeah, and every 2 feet, Bob Hope's head turns into a buttonhole.
Well, never mind. I'll get Orson Welles to put his name on it. People will think it's artistic.
Okay.
Gad, one crisis after another.
Voilà Marcel McGinu, she's prepared for ship or menu.
Good. Now, what are you serving?
Caviar, frog's legs, boiled beef, salad.
No, no, no. This dinner is still too expensive. It has got to be something cheaper.
Only one thing Marcel is cooking cheap. The cold buffet, the sandwich.
A buffet, great. I'll change the picture's title. The Man Who Came to Buffet. Get back to work, Marcel.
Oui, I'm nuts about the good old cold buffet.
Now we're getting someplace. Now let me see. What else can I cut?
F.A. Oh, F.A., this is terrible.
What's wrong, Napper?
The parrot.
Bolivar?
He's disappeared.
Bolivar gone? What happened?
I took him back to the set.
Yes?
I put Bolivar in his cage to run over his dialogue.
Yes?
I turned around to pinch the script girl.
Yes?
I did. She screamed. I turned back. Bolivar was gone.
Dad, without that parrot, we can't finish the Sea Hyena. Clambake Productions will be ruined.
Well, he was mad about your cutting down. Bolivar has probably gone to Disney.
We've got to head him off. Get him back. I'll call the police.
Voilà, Marcel of McGinnis is returned. The buffet is prepared.
Not now, Marcel of McGinnis. I have got to call the police.
Marcel is bringing the sample sandwich for you to okay.
All right, let me have a sandwich there. I'll take a bite.
Ici, monsieur. He is good, no?
Yes, sir. What is it?
It is the chicken.
It's pretty gamey for chicken.
Ah, but it is cheap Marcel is making for nothing.
For nothing?
Oui, I am finding the green rooster running loose. Presto, Marcel is cooking, making the sandwich.
A green rooster, gad, I've just eaten Bolivar.
Why, it's impossible. How could you eat a parrot?
But I did, I tell you.
This is terrible. Are you sure, F.A.?
I'm positive, Gad. I feel indigestion coming on. I want to see John L. Lewis. Will you read a letter for me?
Well, I'll be glad to, Fred. What's it about?
Well, this is National Fire Defense Week, Larry, and Mayor LaGuardia promised to come over tonight and say a few words to the fire chiefs of America.
Yes?
But the mayor is busy these days as director of the Office of Civil Defense, and this afternoon found that the pressure of business would keep him from joining us. So instead, he sent this letter, if you'll be kind enough to read it.
Surely, Fred. I quote, "My dear Fred, I'm sorry I can't be with you on the celebration of the 75th anniversary of the National Board of Fire Underwriters in this country. I had hoped to join, but it so happens that I've been assigned to duties which will take me away from New York on Wednesday night. Please give my greetings and extend my best wishes to the fire chiefs who, in addition to their normal duties, now have a real big job on their hands. Every fire chief should prepare and train an auxiliary force from double to six times his present force, according to the particular strategic location of his city or territory. I expect to give specific recommendations to them real soon. As ever, I know our fire departments will be ready to respond. It may be a one-alarm fire, it may be a fifth alarm, or it may be a tenth. Let the whole world know we are ready. Hoping to see you soon, I am sincerely yours, signed F. LaGuardia, Mayor." End of quotation.
I would like to thank Mayor LaGuardia for his kindness and to congratulate the fire chiefs of America on the excellent work they are doing to safeguard the lives and property of the citizens in their communities. And thank you for joining us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget, next Wednesday night, we'll have Leo DeRocher, manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast and inviting you to drive in anytime. Remember, you're welcome.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.